بسم الله الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه ومن والاه. ثم ما بعد to proceed إن شاء الله today we will be talking about the defects that constitute a ground for the annulment of marriage. And I have a brief introduction before I talk about this issue because this issue may be somewhat sensitive. You know that the truth is usually between two extremes, right? So the truth lies between two extremes most of the time. There is, with regard to talking about issues that are sensitive, issues of sexual content, the truth is in the middle between two extremes. You have one extreme of extreme timidity when it comes to addressing those issues, which will result in people who are uninformed about the issues, and which will also result in the mystification of this particular issue, which was not that mystified, which was not that alluring during the time of the Prophet like it is in some Muslim communities or has been in some Muslim communities throughout the latter centuries or generations, because we as Muslims failed at addressing those issues in the same way the Prophet and his companions, may Allah be pleased with them and may Allah bless him and give him peace, addressed them. They were addressed, as matter-of-fact things that need to be addressed, part of life that is not the disgraceful and people do not need to be ashamed of, and that needs to be regulated, and it is not shameful to be talked about, particularly when it pertains to our practice of our religion, and particularly when it pertains to the health of our families, and particularly when it pertains to judgment between people, rights and duties and so on and so forth. So the Prophet ﷺ spoke about these issues in a matter-of-fact way, and they did not trigger this sensual response. They did not evoke any overly sensual response from the Sahaba radhiyallahu alayhim. So these issues will need to be addressed in a respectful environment. The other end is when people use those issues, and I'm not talking about outside. I'm not talking about bars and nightclubs. I'm talking about within the Muslim community, within Islamic activities. Sometimes people use them as baits. We're going to talk about love tonight at the masjid. but that is fine. Love is not haram. But you are actually falling into the same commercialization of the issue that other people do. This is what sells, then we will use more of this. So if you use it in the same way as a bait to attract people and a bigger audience, this is not Islamic. It truly is not. Therefore, these issues will have to be addressed in the right context, in a more academic, scientific context. And the other question is, how much should the kids be exposed to? I think it is better for the kids to hear about those issues in the masjid than to hear about them outside of the masjid. And it was not ever reported that the Prophet ﷺ had at any time ordered all kids to be removed from the masjid, because we're going to talk about something now that is inappropriate for kids to watch, because, or to listen to, or to, you know, be told of. So that's it. How to guide yourself in this, you know, particular business is by recognizing that haya, which is modesty, is a signature characteristic of Islam. Signature characteristic of Islam. It was reported through a sound chain of narrators by Ibn Majah that the Prophet ﷺ said, "Inna li kulli dinin khuluqa wa khuluqul Islami al-haya." Most certainly, every religion has a hallmark, a signature characteristic or quality, and that hallmark of Islam is al-haya, modesty. Modesty. He said that al-haya'u kulluhu khayr. Al-haya'u la ya'ti illa bi khayr. All modesty is good. Modesty does not bring about but good. Therefore, al-haya' here is not the timidity, which is different. It is the excessive shyness or timidity is different from al-haya'. When is it excessive shyness and timidity? It is excessive shyness and timidity when it prevents you from learning what you need to learn, what you need to know about these issues. So when Aisha, may Allah bestow mercy on her, says that the Prophet ﷺ would pray very close to me, and then in order for him to, you know, to prostrate, he would pray close to me, so close to me that every time he wanted to prostrate, he would have to tap me on the leg to sort of withdraw my feet so that he can prostrate, to show us that he was, you know, he always wanted to be physically close to his wives, so that they're emotionally close to one another. And when she talks about him, you know, kissing while fasting, or when she talks about him requesting his wives to cover from the navel to the knee and having intimacy with them while they're menstruating, all of this is not a violation of modesty, because if we think that these were not modest, then we don't know what modesty is about. All of this is not a violation of modesty, because the information here is viable, essential for people to know, so that the husbands and wives can actually know how to deal with each other, handle one another when he's fasting, when she's menstruating, when he's going out to pray, and so on and so forth. So it is important that we understand that, you know, not talking about these issues and preventing the flow of information regarding these issues is not modesty, it is timidity, it is excessive shyness, and it is not praiseworthy, because had it been praiseworthy, the Sahaba would have preceded us to it. Like Aisha, may Allah bestow mercy on her, said, رَحِمَ اللَّهُ نِسَاءَ الْأَنصَارِ لَمْ يَمْنَعْهُنَّ الْحَيَاءَ أَنْ يَتَفَقَّهْنَ فِي الدِّينِ. May Allah bestow mercy on the women of Al-Ansar. Modesty never prevented them from learning about their religion, because there are some issues that are somewhat sensitive. It is understandable to be sensitive, but the sensitivity of those issues should not prevent us from learning about our religion. If we do, you know, obstruct the flow of information about these issues because of this timidity, what we are doing actually will backfire on us, because those issues will be too tabooed, that they will be too, you know, exciting for someone to know about. And then the child who does not know about them from, you know, in an environment like this will be too excited to know about them from other sources, because these things are part of us. They are in us. We cannot eliminate them. And it will also over-mystify that part of our lives, and this over-mystification of that part of our lives will over-sensualize it, which is not to our best interest at all. But like I said, because al-haya is extremely important in Islam, this has to be done in a matter of, like in a scientific, academic, respectful environment. So we're not going to get two panels of teenagers, men and, you know, girls and boys, to talk about what they think of these issues, because that has never been done by the Prophet ﷺ and the companions, and it sort of makes you feel something in your heart. It doesn't look or sound right. So, you know, if you want to be progressive, if you want to be truly progressive, true progress is to go up, not to go down. Because you can make a lot of progress going down. You know, and this is very easy. And if you're in the middle of the mountain, it is quite easy to make a lot of progress running down. Actually, you can take a free fall, and then you'll be there, you know, at the bottom very, very soon. So true progress is to go up. Now that we have said that, the issue of the facts that constitute a ground for the annulment of marriage. Imam ibn Qudama in Al-Umda, Imam ibn Qudama, may Allah bestow mercy on him, Abdullah, the author of Al-Mughni, the great Ibn Qudama, in his book Umda Al-Umda, said, whenever one of the two spouses finds his partner to be owned, insane, afflicted with vitiligo, leper, or if the man finds the woman to have obstructed genital tract, or she finds him lacking a male reproductive organ, or the male reproductive organ, they would be entitled to annulment of marriage, given that the fact was not known prior to the contract. Okay, all of these issues constitute a ground for the annulment. And now you want to say, you know, why does it have to be this? Well, this is the law. This is Islamic law. And it does benefit us to know about this. And it does not need to be restricted to judges, because just by reading this, what does it show you? It shows you one big thing. You know, just saltish look or outlook at this would show you that Islam is extremely fair towards the two genders, because all of these, you know, there are things that would constitute a ground for annulment that pertain to men, and things that pertain to women, and things that are in common. In common between them is to find the person owned, because if you are the woman or the man, and the person does not tell you, well, my husband turned out not to be free, so he does not have he does not have control over himself. Well, that will cause me some trouble, right? So it is her right then to say, no, I don't want to stay in this relationship. There is the story of Barira. You know, Barira used to be a slave, and her husband, it is controversial whether her husband was slave or free. But she was then bought by Aisha radiallahu anha, and Aisha freed her. And then Barira did not want to stay with her husband, who was a slave, and some reports say that he was free. But after she became free, you know, she said that I don't want him. Whether he was slave or free, that's controversial. But in either case, now that she is free herself, she said, I do not want him anymore. He used to love her, and the Prophet ﷺ would mediate so that she would accept him, accept to stay with him, but she refused. And the Prophet, despite the Prophet mediating for her to accept to stay with him, the Prophet did not force her to stay with him, because she may say now that I, you know, can have better opportunities. So Barira did not stay with him. Eventually, Barira, you know, she had her mind made, and she did not, you know, stay with him. Now, if the person is insane, and this is not necessarily insane all the time, this is insane sometimes, or insane all the time. There is al-majnun al-mutbiq, or الذي يجن ساعة ويفيق ساعة. There is the majnun, the insane that is all the time insane, and there is the insane that is insane occasionally. And we, people who do medicine here, know that this is true. It comes as episodic insanity. So in either case, if that applies to men and women as well. If she, and why does it apply to men if a man can just simply divorce his wife? But if I have been saving for the past couple of years to get married, and you, the father of this woman, did not tell me that she is insane, and I give you all of my savings, you know, as a dowry, and then I buy this and buy that and so on, well, this is unfair, you know. And then I find out that she is insane, it is unfair. Or if she is the woman, and then she, you know, by the way, we're saying that they have the right to annul the marriage. We're not saying that they must annul the marriage, right? We're not saying that they need to annul the marriage. We're saying that this partner who finds his spouse to have one of these defects will have the right to annul the marriage. Well, we just said that the Prophet ﷺ was mediating and was talking, interceding for Barira's husband so that she would keep him. So the issue here is, if she decides to keep that husband, or if he decides to keep that wife and to be patient, he will be greatly rewarded. And this ibtila, or this affliction, will be, you know, a gate for him to enormous reward from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But we're saying that in order for you to ask people to aspire to those levels, you cannot force it on them. Because if you force them to aspire to those levels, to live with a woman that gets insane every couple of years, or a man that gets insane every couple of years, and I get a little too scared that he may walk into the kitchen and come out with a knife and stuff, because that could happen. It is not easy, you know, so I can't force her to reach those heights, or him. But I can tell them, if you're patient yourself and, you know, take care of your wife or your husband and so on, despite their illness that is extraordinary, then they may aspire if they don't feel forced. So Islam tells them, if you bear with this affliction, you'll be rewarded, but if you can't, you have the right for annulment. Now, it is understandable why the wife would need the right of annulment, because she does not instigate divorce by herself, even though she has khula, but khula is a different issue. But people may ask, why does the husband need to annul? Because if he annulled the marriage, he will be entitled to his dowry and to the money that he spent. And for many people, you know, you may not really recognize this in America, because it's so easy for people to get married. They just rent a studio and then they just move in. But, you know, back home, people actually spend 10 years in preparation so that they can get married. So if he gets married, then he gets, you know. Now, the other route, we said that the person will be talking to his wife because he gets married to her. And we said that Islam gives like a very gradual, you know, stepwise approach to the issue of getting acquainted with one another. And we said that when the man does the khidbah or the engagement, he will be able to sit down in the presence of non-marriageable kin nearby, not necessarily, you know, between them, but they can even leave the room for them to sit down together. If the door is open, they can, you know, the family will hang out in a different room, and they'll be given some time to talk to each other, to get to know one another. And then when they get contracted before the consummation of marriage, they become a wife and a husband, but with a condition to not consummate the marriage until they move in and they have the wedding and so on and so forth. Some people may say, well, had it been like, you know, here, for instance, in the West, where people get a little bit more acquainted than this before marriage, where they live together, you will not have had this problem. Well, they already moved in together, and he found out about her problem, or she found out about his problem, and they had separation. So it is the same thing. You know, before or after marriage, it will result in the same psychological trauma, if you consider it to be a psychological trauma for the person who has the sickness. But in the first case, it was out of the wedlock. In the second case, it is not. So there is not that much difference. And no matter how much you get acquainted with each other, some defects will only show later. Particularly this episodic insanity, because the person can be fine. I mean, you can be engaged for 2 years, and she's fine, or he's fine. And then, all of a sudden, you know, if that is something that happened during marriage, then the wife will have the right to right of separation or annulment if it happened, if it was not there from before. The husband does not have that right. The husband does not have that right. Why? Because he can divorce. And in this case, why not take his dowry? Because it's a new thing. But the majnun, or the one who is insane, whether it is all the time or episodic, if the spouse is insane, the other spouse will be entitled to annulment. The abras, which is the one who is afflicted with vitiligo. Vitiligo is a chronic skin condition characterized by patches of hypopigmentation on different parts of the body. It could be the whole body or part of the body. That includes the hair and so on. You can say, why particularly vitiligo here? It's not such a big deal, you know. I know a lot of people like this. They're fine. Okay. Now, you have to understand that these are not, this is not a comprehensive list. And this is something that many times we fail to understand when we read fiqh books by the scholars. This is not a comprehensive list. These are examples to show you the kind of things that well can constitute a ground for annulment of marriage. If he is not going to be able to have her all the time because she's owned, or she's not going to be able to have him all the time because of the same reason, it constitutes a ground for annulment. If insanity constitutes a ground for annulment, diseases that are repulsive, would constitute a ground for annulment. Now, this applies to the man and the woman. You know, if the woman is sort of repelled by the disease, so if you have another skin condition that is repulsive, the same will apply. It does not have to be only vitiligo. But there is another reason why the scholars particularly mentioned vitiligo, which is that added to the people who have patches of lighter color skin. My medical definition did not come and get across, right? Chronic skin disease with patches of hypopigmentation. People have patches of lighter color skin on different parts of their body. But vitiligo, people who are afflicted by this, and the person who is afflicted by this can be greatly rewarded by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This could be a great person, a great scholar, a great mujahid, a great worshiper. It's an affliction from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But this affliction, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala would reward him for it, but his spouse does not have to bear with it. You know, she is encouraged to be patient, but she does not have to bear with it. That is the difference. And you have to, in order for you to help people aspire to heights of virtue, don't force them. So that is why Allah made 5 obligatory prayers, but there is the night prayers, and there are the 4 rak'ahs before Dhuhr, and the 2 after Dhuhr, and the 2 here and 2 there, you know. But if you force all of that, it will cause, it will have a, the opposite effect. Okay, so people who have vitiligo, they have an autoimmune disease that attacks those melanocytes, which are the cells that that produce the pigment that gives us color, melanocytes. Those melanocytes come from the neural crest. I will make the long story short. People who have vitiligo also have sexual dysfunction. So it is, they don't have the same libido, and they don't perform sexually as the rest. So that is why it was, you know, it was put here as an example. But like I said, these are examples, so you will extrapolate from those examples. If the man found his the spouse or the wife or the bride to have obstructed genital tract, that happens. There are certain medical conditions that will prevent him from having intercourse, and then certainly it is a difficulty and hardship to be married, but to be incapable of having intercourse. But the mirror image of this is for the wife to find the husband lacking the male reproductive organ. And that happens, whether it is congenital or accidental, trauma, etc. And there are other things also that we will go over shortly. But all of these things are quite obvious. The reason here why annulment is the right of the party, the other party that is not, you know, that is not the sick party, the other party, the reason why they can have annulment of the marriage is quite obvious. We did say that they don't have to, but they are entitled, because we cannot force them to live a life that they find to be unsatisfying and difficult. Now, they will only be entitled to annulment if they had not known prior to the marriage about the condition. But had they known and they still got married, they can't come back and say, well, I changed my mind. Because it's over. It's over. Only if they had not known about the condition before marriage can they annul it. Like I said, if the condition develops after the marriage, the husband will be able to divorce and the wife will be entitled to separation, revoking the marriage. Because these conditions will make it difficult for someone to live with, they're encouraged, but they are not forced to continue in this relationship. Now, the second point here is that annulment is not permissible except with a judicial ruling. So this it is not, you know, you can't just decide on your own that she has a condition or he has a condition that would make it, that would make the marriage revoked or annulled. If the woman claimed that her husband is impotent and he can't have intercourse with her, and he disputed that and claimed to have not sought her yet, he will be given up to 1 year from the time of disputation. If he did not have intercourse with her, she would be given the choice of staying with him or leaving him. I forgot to tell you, you see, all of this is mirror image for the man and the woman. It shows you how women are treated very fairly, how in Islam, unlike what some people may think, it is not like she doesn't have rights. She has the same rights. It is not like she doesn't have rights to a sexual life. She has the same rights. She can come and say, you know, but the impotence is a little bit different, that because it is different from lacking the organ. Because how could you prove that the person is impotent, does not get erection? It is hard to prove this. And it is also hard to say to the man, you know, you have 3 days. Because just by saying you have 3 days, he will never get better. You know, the anxiety alone will make it impossible for him. Therefore, he was given up to a year, so that he does not feel that he's racing against time, because that very feeling will make it impossible for him to have a normal sexual life with his wife. But the woman has the right. Now, if the woman could not prove that, you know, she has the khula, right? She can't prove, if she cannot get annulment, she has the khula. I mean, she's truly having difficulty. Like, she's not satisfied physiologically, biologically. She's not satisfied. And then she fears for herself, fitna for herself. Then she have the khula. However, we do say that whether it is the man or the woman, we do encourage patience. And certainly there is a lot more to marriage than just sex. That is part of it. But there is a lot more to marriage than just this part. Isn't that true? Then we talk about Islam recognizing all the pleasures as wholesome and clean. We talked about Islam recognizing all the pleasures as wholesome and clean. But we did also talk about Islam recognizing that pleasures are different and some are higher than others. Nothing is unclean or filthy or bad. All wholesome and clean. Allah created them in us, inserted, inculcated them in us. But we said before that we have the carnal pleasures at the bottom of the list, the bottom. Carnal pleasures, food and sex. And then you have the pleasures that would come next to this are sensual but not carnal. Sensual but not carnal. Like, you know, you're seeing a beautiful scenery, smelling a good odor or scent. This is a pleasure, right? It is sensual, but it is not necessarily carnal. So that's a little bit higher than the carnal pleasure for food and sex. And then you have a pleasure that is somewhat higher than the sensual pleasure, which is the propositional pleasure. It is abstract. It is not perceived through your senses, such as the pleasure with accomplishment, achievement, success, right? You get happy. And then there is a higher pleasure than this, which is the emotional pleasure that is not carnal or sensual. There is emotional pleasure that is mixed with carnal and sensual. But there is an emotional pleasure, you know, that is not mixed with any carnal feelings, bodily feelings, or sensual from sensation. What is this? Huh? Maternal, yes. Loving your child. Maternal love, for instance. Paternal also. You know. When you love your aunt. You know. Things like that. So it's an emotional pleasure. Like, you know, when a son has been absent for a couple of years and he goes back to his mother, there is no other pleasure that would, you know, there is no food, nothing that would equal the amount of pleasure that she'll feel when her son comes back. This is not sensual, it is not carnal, and it is higher than the pleasure of achievement and success and so on. And it is only lower than or short of spiritual, which is, you know, the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala as the one deserving of all love. So you see, it is not all one thing. Therefore, married people can actually find pleasures in things other than sex. By the way, married people can find, it is good for married people to have lives also of their own. Because people who don't have a life, they can be the trouble. So you should not suppress your wife's interests in other things besides you. Because if you become her only focus of attention, that is, you know, the end of your peace of mind and the end of your happiness. The same applies vice versa. So she should not want her husband to have no business but her. Because once we have no business but one another, we become so much burdensome. But if people have interests in other areas, like she likes sewing, for instance, or you like something that is beneficial, like sewing. Usually men like things that are not very beneficial, like, you know, cricket and soccer and stuff. But if you like, you know, fixing, you know, furniture, just doing something beneficial, you know, plumbing or electricity or thing. Anyway. So that would be nice, so that you can get off of each other for some time. Otherwise, if you're breathing over one another all night or evening and night long, it is not really healthy or helpful. Take my advice. It is important that people have lives. You know, and because when they don't, I know lots of cases where they like each other a little bit too much, and they're spending a little bit too much time with each other. And that results in trouble thereafter, because then the things become routine and mundane, and since they did not develop lives and interests of their own away from one another, and then they got used to one another, and they were just stuck to each other, it becomes quite difficult, like conjoined twins. You know conjoined twins? You know, they sort of, it doesn't get, you, people don't get any closer than this. They're not only siblings, they're twins, but they're not twins, they're conjoined twins. But then it becomes too burdensome, particularly when they grow up and they realize that, you know, this is really awkward. They were different from everyone else. So that is important. What I wanted to say also is that if you are too focused on that part of marriage, it is also unhealthy. Therefore, you need to develop other means of strengthening the relationship. This part is not filthy. It is important, and we said many times, physical proximity will nurture the emotional, you know, ties and so on. But there are also other things that you should give attention to, such as having unity of purpose that we talked about over and over. If you bring your wife to the class and you have a unity of purpose, like you talk about the same things, you're involved in the same activities, but not necessarily doing everything together, but you have the same objectives, you know, the same objectives, that will give people unity of purpose. Now, as far as the issue of sex per se, people need to be seeing consultants. Nowadays, it is not shameful, it is not a bad thing that when people have sexual dysfunction, to go and see some consultant to help them with their sexual dysfunction. You know, because if people don't, then they're actually not seeking treatment, because this is an illness, this is a disease. And the Prophet ﷺ said to dawa, seek treatment. And if you have a disease or incapacity in some area, you should seek treatment, because there are ways for women, you know, even if the man has this issue, there are ways for women to reach a climax even with this issue. There are also ways for the man to reach a climax even with the woman having some of those difficulties of the genital tract, obstructions, and so on, and so forth. Now, if she chose to leave him, you know, this impotent guy, and then the 1 year is over, if she chose to leave him, the ruler will separate between them, except if she had known of his impotence before her marriage or said, I accept him as impotent at the time of marriage. Like we said before, you know, what matters is, did you know at the time of marriage? If you know and you agree, then you can say, let me annul it. If she came to know about it after the contract, yet she abstained from seeking separation, her right in that shall not be dropped. If he said she had known of my impotence and she accepted me after that, and she denied, then the claim to be considered is hers, not his. Because maybe she was waiting. It is different from the other conditions. Different from the other conditions. Like she can't say, come and say, after 4 years, I found him to be lacking the male reproductive organ. Well, it's been 4 years. This is not something that you just came to know. Then you have accepted him this way, and since you have accepted him, you can't request annulment. But this particular issue of impotence, maybe she will say, you know, I was waiting for things to get better. Then she's entitled. If he had intercourse with her once, he is not impotent. If he claims to have had but then if he had it once and then he could not have it again, if she lucked into this relationship, as I said, she should be encouraged to develop ways of coping and continuing in this relationship and finding ways of sexual gratification that are not, you know, dependent on this. But if she could not take it, she will have khula, is always there. If a woman truly cannot take, carrying on with a marriage. If he claims to have had intercourse with her and she denied, if she was virgin, she will be examined by trustworthy women, like a trustworthy woman physician, female physician, and their statement shall be accepted, that trustworthy female physician. If she was found thayyib, previously wed, his statement along with his oath shall be taken. It's a matter of proving whether, you know, this man has this defect or not. We have to understand that this is a defect. And we have to understand that men and women in this type of relationship are entitled to sexual gratification. and if they can't attain that sexual gratification, they have the right to end that relationship if they cannot cope. Can they cope? Many people can. Are they encouraged to cope? Yes, they are encouraged to cope. Shall they be rewarded if they cope? Yes, they will be rewarded if they cope. But Islam does not force high aspirations on people. That's it.